welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to give thanks to each and every one of you that are connecting in this moment. Today on The Giving Tree, we have special guest Scott Swanson, and this segment was inspired by his words of being in service with his company, All Centered. He's going to share his wisdom that he finds in silence, presence in every moment, and how he approaches life from being in-centered. This approach leads to being in wellness, and he will share how to become aligned, move forward, energize, and revive. Without further ado, let's dive in with Scott.
So we're sitting here with Scott. Scott, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So we just had the interview. It was silent. So we decided that would be the best interview ever, just silence. So we'll just ring the bell and then come back after the public service announcement. But all kidding aside, I want to thank you, one, for being here. But what struck me and the reason I was really inspired to interview you was to have you talk a little bit about, one, working with individuals and getting them to tap into all aspects of themselves, bringing themselves into center, and then for yourself to reflect how service is intertwined into that process.
Wow, that's the antithesis of practice. First, you know, the practice is for me has been with myself, doing my own work. And I think through a lot of adversity and challenges in my life, or even a part of me, I think I was just kind of born that way. Really a little mini theologian and philosopher and seeker, always trying to, you know, understand, hey, what is this thing that I'm in the middle of? You know, while kids played, I mean, I played, right? Played with my cars and I had fun, but I always had this really like, wow, what is this? And my entire life has been, in one way or the other, tapping into and trying to discover what that is. I've gone down a lot of wild paths, and I've had a lot of challenges. But I realized, and I always had this deep-seated desire to help humanity, to be there for others. I think it really started to come out when I was 15, my mom was dying of cancer. She had, for over 2 years, was just kind of deteriorating. But I was a kid that would come home and mow the yard and cook and clean and make her bed as soon as she went to the bathroom and get her a thing of ice water. So there was something in me that just, it didn't feel like a chore to do that. So I wanted to help others. But along the way, I wasn't doing my own work, right? So here you are around people that are needing help, and you have this intuition, this instinct, this thing that's embedded in you to help people. But for me, it took some time to realize it was like, stop. Where are you? Who are you? Where are you at within the journey? As soon as I got that and really started getting into my own practice, it was kind of like when you honor you, you honor all those around you. So what is it to honor you? And for me, it took a lot of getting very still. As we had discussed before, you know, it kind of evolved into living in a temple. In a very old school, Shikin Taza, Soto Zen, sit, eyes open, downward gaze, there's the wall, go. For a long time, years. And that was like coming home. That there was something there in that was more absolute and more total than anything on the planet. And from there you can see all the things and all the people and everyone doing what they're doing. Beyond all that is the individual and the personal experience. So I would be in the temple and I'd be sitting at the wall and then, boom, the singing bowl would ring and it was time to talk about the Dharma, about, Suzuki Roshi something. And for me, I'd be like, hey, this is great, but there was something going on over there at the wall that was extremely powerful, and that was me. And I'm saying all this, and I'm kind of preluding up to the inward journey, the inward awareness, the human alchemy of life and our path that kind of leads us into the moment and how present we are for that moment and for that person being there. And what we're bringing to the table, what is it? Is it somebody else's idea? Is it a book we read? Is it a guru that we used to follow around? Or is it our own unique awareness and connection to divinity? Now from there, from that place, I felt like, wow, there's something beautiful there. And for me, immediately, it was kind of like a download. It's like, this is I'm going to do this. Instead of being ordained, which is what you're ultimately in a temple to do, is to be ordained, which I love where I lived, and I love the people, and that's my sangha. And I love going there. It's like going home. But for me, it was like, instead of doing retreats, do koans and vipassana, or do chakra balancing. I played the flute for you. You know I can play the flute. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing any of that, I'm going to do retreats that are kind of like stripping the Zen out of Zen, getting out of the way, and helping people tap into that non-diluted formal introduction to self. And wow, it took a little time to put it together and a little courage. And I did them, and they were beautiful. They're very simple, very clean. Good food, a good place to sleep, and this really nurturing space that allowed people to drop into body and self. So that was kind of like my life, right? Tapped into this thing when I was a kid, off in a million different directions, partying, checking out after my mom died, checking out after, you know, like moments of just not being able to handle the sensory of life, because I was always an extremely sensitive kid, and learning how to manage the experience that I'm in. Everything was a building block to me. Everything was an opportunity for me to explore self, to grow and to evolve, and to be who I am in this very moment speaking to you. And that's a beautiful kind of authenticity that each of us can bring into everything that we do in our lives, and it's very important, especially today. It's a very noisy place. And so these retreats I started doing, instead of being ordained, were done without any philosophy, theology, or ideology. Because those are beautiful. But beyond that, is the feeling and experiential realm. And I realized, wow, things that we achieve intellectually are not sustainable. But an experience, a moment, a person's moment, their own moment created by themselves within their practice without me adding sugar on top was a very powerful thing to do. So how can I do that times the world? In a world that's so focused on television and reaching outside of themselves for people, for guidance, for understanding, for awareness, when the reality is, for me, nothing was broke and nothing needed to be fixed. So it all led into me in my late 30s, living in a temple for years, and really feeling like for the first time, wow, this is that thing. This is that thing that I felt when I was a kid. This is that thing that I was aware of. And I mean, I was a kid. I would go to churches. My mom was raised Roman Catholic, so she never forced me to go to church, because it was really pressed on her. But I would take buses and go. The first book I ever really wanted to buy was a Bible when I was 9. I actually saved myself. I found the Bible. It said 1978, Scott Swanson is saved. My mom is like, where are you from? Right? How do you get, you know? It's just something that's I brought with me. It's something that's who I am. But a lot of it was a lot of elimination. No. But in that temple, and I'm very grateful I got to live in this temple. This isn't like a Tassajara or a type of place you could pay to go. This is a temple that was founded by Kobachino Roshi. He was one of the first Buddhists to bring, monks to bring Buddhism to the West with Suzuki Roshi. This was his home. So it was a letter of intent. It was meeting with the monk, the head monk there. It's doing the sesshin. It's living there for 2 weeks. It's every, well, we'll see. You know, it's not an easy place to live. You have to be, they have to feel like there's something going on there. It leads back to these moments, to having that aha moment, that self moment. And then for me, my life has been about really discernment. For me, I've always been able to go into a room and feel if something is aligned. I've always been able to go into a church and feel whether, wow, there's something here that's right or not, an absolute. I went to one church for 5 years, and it was founded by a guy named Reverend Ken Williamson, and it was a unity church in the Midwest, and that guy was awesome. It was positive Christianity. It was very non-dualistic. It was very, very open. It wasn't dogmatic at all or proselytizing at all. And that really resonated with me. So, I mean, it's a long answer to your question, but it's a lot. It's a loaded question. All of that led into me doing retreats, and even today, with my company and the things that we do, really just kind of honing in on the things that matter, being the Steve Jobs of wellness, right? Realizing all the things that don't work and honing in on the things that do and doing them better than anyone else, and really helping people within practice to really understand what a good practice is. For me, that's part of my service. I'm an educator. I'm a re-educator. The reality is, and especially where we live in LA, is that a lot of the people who say they meditate, maybe 80%, don't. It's not an intellectual thing. It's not, there are the things around a practice, and then there is the practice. And for me, this is my service to the world. This is what I do is in living in service to others. Is I'm here to, in a very humble, not even me, something bigger than me, is here to, in the most humble way, through me in way, just like other people, and with the deepest bow of gratitude, say, wake up, come on, man, where are you? What's your practice?
The two things that popped out was one, remembering. How can you encourage others to remember? We were talking a little bit about the kids today, but then also part of the process it sounds like you went through is just kind of remembering that which you were when you came in as a child. And then the other part, if you can talk about how you can encourage people or if you have any ideas. And then also if you can talk about a little bit about authenticity, like integrity with our words. When you mentioned that many people, especially here in LA, it's Hollywood, there's a lot of imagination going on, how to be authentic with what we represent ourselves as and why that's important.
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with remembering some of these things are just gifted to us. Or some people might think they're not gifts. I think both things have to do with coming home, coming back to the self. If you think about it, both of the questions, remembering, right? Remembering our roots, like a tree being rooted in the ground, reaching for the sky for what it needs to sustain itself, just silently sitting there being, receiving what it needs to be. And it will give its life without a whisper. A lot of what we need to do, what I feel would be great for people to do, is have that practice to coming back to self. I had these T-shirts made for one of the retreats I did, and it said, I used to do this thing called Just Sit Meditation. Wasn't really popular. But for the people that came and got it, they loved it, right? Mm-hmm. But it said, just do this one thing. Come back to the silence like coming home. Mm-hmm. right? I'm going to hit on that not being popular thing. Why? Sure, on the surface, well, what, sitting silent? Come on, I can do that. Well, it's not an easy thing to do. A sitting practice, a silent sitting practice, takes a lot of courage at first. Because we're used to layering and putting things on top of things and hearing things and downloading, then re-purging them and saying them. And it's mind stuff. And when you sit, there you are with all of you and all that is. Ooh. Right? So I would encourage anyone that wants to help to make sure you know where home is for you. Where is my home? Where's my beginning? Where is my start? Not the perceivable start, not the things that have, compounded over time, which are all beautiful, right? But we all have a home. We have a home base. We have a place before and beyond all the noise that we are. And if we can move from there, that if we are tapped into that, then it's like instead of it's like walking a good practice is like walking in the mist. You'll never get rained on, but eventually you'll be drenched. You don't go places to get something. It's not like you go there and it's a boomerang and you go out. People would say, well, what was it like living in the mountains for years and then coming down the hill? It's always down there, because usually they're way up in the mountains, tucked away in the middle of nowhere. And I said, I never did. Right? So for all, the Hollywood people out there having beautiful moments and wanting to share them with others, we need to be really mindful of how we're moving today as far as what we're bringing into the space. Our intentions, a lot of people I've seen, they have these amazing experiences. They'll go to India, they'll go to a retreat, or they'll do some ayahuasca ceremony or something like that, and they'll have a moment, and they will want to instinctively, out of the nature of their heart, bring that to other people and have them do what they did to have their moment. But guess what? That was their moment. Right? That for the realm of authenticity that we need today in practice, that we need today in the world of healing and helping our brothers and sisters, is to find a way to get out of the way and to help people come home to that perfect alignment and awareness, not diluting it or distorting it with any outside anything, and letting them know that they can have their own experience. There are 7.4 billion people here today? There are all books, authors, leaders, and gurus here to shine. If we're going to be in that place of practice, I think that is a really an important thing to think about. Who am I? What am I bringing into this space? Where am I moving from? Have I done my work? Am I aware of where these words are coming from? Am I mindful of my language and my speech? Because I'm pouring this into people's ears. It's a big thing. And if people are in the right position of wanting and needing, they will embrace it. And that may be good. It may not be good. So as far as authenticity, I think that's a really important thing to hit on.
This morning I actually was connecting to you a little bit after meditating, and in my mind I was going through, well, in our society, how it is set up today, if we don't have food, water, or shelter, people are in fight or flight. However, that takes care of the physical temple, right? And maybe the emotional temple, mental temple. But what's the one thing, the answer was silence, that nourishes both the physical, the mental, the spiritual body, that all we really need is silence to nourish all those things, that food, water, and shelter. We've been kind of conditioned that if we don't have one of those things, that everything will fall apart. So if you can share a little bit on how silence can deeply nourish that mind, body, and spirit, as it's been phrased, that you can put it in your own words, and how it can actually bring the whole system into harmony, unlike anything in the materium that you physically are perceiving.
You ask great questions.
I love hearing that.
I'm going to be calling you later.
Last question.
This is great. No, they're just great things to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now we're getting into manifesting and co-creation. You know, I was telling you earlier about the sesshins that we do, which are Buddhist intensives. Soto Zen is just eyes open, downward gaze. 40-minute sits, 10-minute kinhin walking, and it's from, you know, around 5 in the morning till 9 at night for a week in total silence. It's interesting when you do that, what you go through. You know, the winding down. Mind is mind. You can't stop or let go of mind. Your relationship to your mind, which is your nature, changes. And when your relationship to your mind and your nature and everything that is and the phenomenon around you, then the perspective changes. From being so affected by mind and thought, and the things that are happening, it tends to kind of grind down the edges and create this spacious feeling in relationship to things that are going on. And I think that's the kind of thing that starts to really marinate in a sitting practice, is a relationship to your body and your mind and the space around you in a sitting practice. And then there's these points that are beyond the mind. I think one of the words, like yaza, like around a Wednesday, mm-hmm. when you want to just take off, or you're at your edge in your practice. And if you can be with that, and we all get put to our edge, if we can be with that, if we can be with what is, if we can be with these fears of whether it's economic insecurity, if a lack of something, and really make room for that, we see that a lot of that is a story too. And then there's this point in your practice where you're not in fear of that. You don't need to be reactive to that. Now, you can suffer from that, but that's okay too. Of course we suffer. I suffer. I don't float around on a cloud of unaffected whatever. Nobody does. If you listen carefully to some of our great teachers that are out there publicly, listen, the greatest disservice anyone could do to anyone is act like they're unaffected. All the feelings are here for us to feel. Sometimes we feel a little fear, sometimes we feel worry, sometimes we feel lack, but it's beautiful. We can be with that. We can make room for that within our practice. And we can feel what we are before and beyond that within our practice. And when I say practice, I don't say just sitting on a cushion. I'm not thinking just sitting on a cushion. I'm talking on the cushion, off the cushion. Everything we do becomes our practice. Everything is an art form. How we meet every experience is our practice. And we can find a way to settle into that and be okay with it and feel ourselves beyond it and feel our connection to something that's so grand, that's so complete. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Death? I'm cool with it, right? I am. I'm at peace. I've been tested with it. I know. And so what do I have to worry about? What do we really have to worry about? If we just take a collection of the things that we have, our sight, our bodies, our health, our minds, tomorrow, we all have something that is a gift. If we come back to that again, if we come home, if we come back to our practice, if we come back to how we're meeting these feelings of whether it's a lack of and or a frustration of or a fear of, we can be with it long enough and it can dissipate. And then you're just left with what is. And it's not bad.
So as you were speaking, non-duality, moving beyond duality in a dualistic perceived world, What does that mean to you?
It means you're me. It means we're one. It means that we're here in this space right now having this conversation to help guide each other and others through the journey. It means I'm the singing bowl and I'm the war and I'm the pollution and one with all things. And then for me, it's to know my part in that. What's my role within it? And a lot of it comes back to making sure that I am doing my work, that I'm taking care of my awareness. And I'm very mindful of my speech and what I do. And I don't do it perfectly. But I'm okay. I nurture myself through the process and others. That's what we're doing.
So if you can share a little bit, I know within my own practice, my mind has been blown several times and into ways that I can't even explain to people, especially in how our thoughts and our speech are very, I'll call them very lethal weapons, potentially, or beautiful magic wands. So if you could share with the listeners a little bit how you relate to that, the mind and our speech, and why you might or might not recommend to be aware and present with them.
Well, I mean, there's no way to not be present with them.
Well, sometimes they can just take a life of their own.
Well, and there is attachment to mind, attachment to thoughts, running and perpetuating a story. And at the end of the day, it's just a story. It's not happening. You know, this is happening. This conversation is happening. When I pour a tea and I'm there with that tea and that cup, that's happening. And I get to be there with that. I think a healthy perspective to mind is in order, especially around all the things that are out there that people do to feel better. We tend to want to use the mind to navigate that terrain, but the mind is limited. Just like in science, not in, you know, quantum physics, there's the God particle. In our practice too, there are parts of your practice, of practice that the mind just can't be there. It can't meet it, because it's beyond that. So I would say one understanding that your mind is your nature. You hear a lot of let go. I'm trying to stop thoughts. I'm trying to navigate something in or out when, you know, what's in, what's out? How do you let anything go? Versus accepting, right? Finding that place where everything can be with you and be with you long enough to be what it needs to be and resonate with the core of your being, good or perceivably good or bad, and let it settle in you. Then you become the mountain, right? Something to ponder. What is the relationship to my mind and my practice? If you're using it to do something, it's like revving up the engine to cool it off. I love the saying of like the reflection pool, and every thought is like a stone in the water, and it ripples the water. And if we can be still. Have a healthy, let the mind do what it does, but from a place of unaffected equanimity, just observing the mind and your nature over time and being very still and not adding anything onto it and being aware of like, here I am telling a story. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to come back to the breath and the body, watching the water calm. And then we see clearly.
In a city where there is, since we're in the city where there's this inception of great stories that carry us off to far places. It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
If you can share a little bit, because you said instinctually in places you will just be able to tell if there's alignment or not. And if you can talk about how to stay connected to the mountaintop, but also to the roots, to being grounded a lot of times in people that have practices or are attempting to have practices, they will get various in Ayurveda, Vata, a very imbalance, and they forget, you know, there's roots to the tree, not just the wind blowing. So if you can share a little bit about that for you, how you keep that heaven, metaphorical heaven to earth, flowing through you to be of service to others.
Yeah. Well, one, I'm a conduit. So a conduit of all things, things coming through me and pouring out into the world. So for me, I'm aware of the things that ground me. One of them is nature. I was telling you, I live in L.A. I live on the 17th floor of a sky rise, and I hear sirens going by, and then there's people, human gravity, that I'm around all the time too. And so when I have a practice, I sit at night, and in the morning I have a ritual, and then when I feel it, it's time to maybe do something more. I do that. So I'll get in my car, like I told you, and I drove to Joshua Tree, and I found not even the camping sites, but the furthest, most isolated dirt road I could find, and then I hiked out and sat on a rock with my flutes and just, I'm like, okay. And seeing that kind of visual awe of this thing that I'm in the middle of really helps to put things into perspective. And seeing what's available to us. A tree shows us how to ground. It's rooted in the earth. It's silent. It's reaching for the sky. It knows, you know, it's just still. The stars orbits these massive things with tons of gravity just beautifully orbiting each other. There isn't any perceivable pontification or analysis going on up there. It's just kind of done and happening. I'm like, wow, I'm that. For me, it's really knowing what these, listening to, hey, what does my body need right now?
All centered, you've been building this. It feels like a garden. And planting the seeds and allowing them to germinate and grow. And right now, how do you see that it can be of greatest service to your clients? And if you can please share with the listeners all that you're offering within it. I find it very interesting and beautiful that you're touching on so many different things, but they're necessary to keep the system running.
Well, first I have to say that for All Centered and what we stand for, it's not what we are a part of. It's not what we do, but it's how we do it. That's very unique. So we've collectively sat down. And also I don't know if this was some kind of weird, I really feel like kind of like what Steve Jobs did with computers. You know, so much of what is going on doesn't work. He's like, listen, we do 15 things and they're crap. Mm-hmm. We're going to do 5 things and we're going to do them better than anyone else on the planet. And I really feel like this is kind of what we need within the world of wellness. We really need to start honing in on the things that really matter. So with that said, that is kind of our way, getting really educated and grounded in the things that really impact. So one of those things is our Revive program. And Revive is cool. It's really taking an honest look at what is holistic. Well, and one, what really heals the body. So for us, holistic isn't holistic if you go to 5 different people for 5 different things and each one has their own agenda. That holistic is bringing all these people together collectively around the individual, sharing the same agenda, and not having one thing fragmented out. Because if one thing's gone, it won't work. So what are those things? The Revive program we're doing now within Equinox clubs. We've been given Marina Del Rey and Irvine location, which says a lot about the program. The program is really peeling away the layers. So what is the source? For us, we determined, science has determined, hormones are king and queen. But elegant hormone therapy, really doing all the proper testing to make sure that somebody qualifies for hormone treatments, because it's a very powerful thing when you're messing with hormones. But that's not just enough. A lot of doctors test just for hormones so they can prescribe hormones and make money. For us, we said you can't fragment anything out in that either. So there's vitamin deficiencies and insulin and thyroid and genetic predisposition to heart disease, food sensitivity testing. All that testing needs to be done. So we've aligned with doctors that will do the testing that we want, that will, you know, support our program. And then from there, we're layering in PhD nutritional counseling. From there, we're layering in training sessions. And the nutritional counselor tells Zen Foods how to make the food. The food is made and delivered to your home. And we wrap this all in a six-month program. Hmm. So we have a scientific element where science meets spirit, kind of an element within our company. That's one thing. And then Become is really what we've been talking about today. That's a very foundational practice. And that's something that we're now doing with corporations. Mm-hmm. And it's simple. It works in the sense of, because it's not approached with a philosophy, theology, or idea, it's something that nicely blends into any company environment. HR companies, they have agendas. They want to lower sick days, increase productivity, decrease group conflict. They have kind of a wish list of money that they spend every year, millions of dollars, trying to achieve something. And we've gone to them and said, listen, how's that working for you? Give us your people for a year. And let's bring 50 or 100 of them together in a room and teach them, let them have a practice together. Let them drop into their body and become aware of why or why they aren't picking up the phone or doing what they need to be doing, why they are or aren't working with you. If you can let everyone come home and come back and touch base and really get grounded in their reality, you're going to get everything that you need without investing millions and millions of dollars by creating a practice within your workspace. Right? So that's kind of, these are the things, the seeds that we planted. And I think they're oak trees. A little more about who we are and what we're doing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
And so within your programs, are you currently working with additional corporations aside from doing your nutritional revive program with Equinox? If people want to get a hold of you and welcome you into their organization, how do they do so?
Yeah. A website, of course. So anyone can go to All Centered or just Google us. We're there. ALLCENTERED All Centered. And learn more about what we're doing and how we're doing it.
And another question, I did a little research about your past with working in the IT world, right? In the IT world. But if you could share a little bit about, and I recently had a really beautiful experience experiencing nature through technology. If you can share a little bit about this world right now, the juxtaposition of nature with boxes that record and transmit versus us just being the transmitters. We're kind of working hand in hand, and how you feel that can actually aid us potentially in the future or not. I'd love to hear your take on it.
That's a big one. It brings us together and it keeps us apart. Yeah. So, you know, we have, for me, it's, and I am a tech guy. I'm busted. You know, I'm just kidding. No, but yeah, I have a background of you know, selling global infrastructures to big companies. The real, you know, the heartbeat of technology, and the background of all the pressure of that as well, that world. That's always on the radar for me. How much time I'm in front of my computer, what I'm doing with it. I've done this really cool thing for me. I just call it Facebook Friday. Mm-hmm. So Friday is kind of a day that I use to just catch up. And it's fun. It's like opening up a present, mm-hmm. right? You know, an ice cream cone is always better than 5 gallons of ice cream, right?
Well said.
So use it wisely. And for me, I always make sure I'm connecting. If I have a choice of being in an elevator and being on my phone, I keep my phone in my pocket and I say hi to somebody. If I buy somebody a tea or somebody who's home wants some food, that needs food, I get to know them. That's a big part of waking up. Use it wisely. Use our time wisely, yeah, and technology wisely.
So I appreciate you being here, sitting, and having some tea and playing the flute. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Once again, I want to thank Scott for joining us today. Please connect to their links below, All Centered, and the programs they have to offer. We are going to exit out with a little Robert Jackson, his brother Coyote. This is a friend of Scott's and seemed a perfect pairing to the time that we spent together. Until next time, this is she signing out with a soft gaze, a full heart, a big smile, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply.